to Mouth Wednesday. This is January the 21st, 2009. History was made yesterday as Barack Obama took the oath of office for President of the United States of America. And today on the Word of Mouth, we're welcoming change and hoping for a better future. And the co-host, Robin Yento, will be has produced a report on the Justice for Janitors Impact Cleaning Workers Rally that took place earlier this afternoon. We're going to play that. And then later in the show, we'll be speaking with speaking about local and international issues with a political commentator and hip-hop community recording artist, 95.6. And also, Robin Yento has interviewed a member of Parliament for Wellham, Malcolm Allen. And they're going to be speaking about the federal economic plans and the automotive bailout schemes of the Prime Minister, Harper. Plus, we got some news headlines, some music, and even a few clips of the man whose day this is, Barack Obama, the man who is now president of the USA. That's number 44 to be exact. Barack Hussein Obama, yes, we can. So we got all that coming up on CKLN 88.1 FM. So stay tuned because we're going to be right back right after this.
We must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America. For the American Revolution did not end when the British guns fell silent. It was never something to be won only on a battlefield or fulfilled only in our founding documents. It was not simply a struggle to break free from empire and declare independence. The American Revolution was and remains an ongoing struggle in the minds and hearts of the people to live up to our founding creed.
That's right. The word is the American Revolution continues. Barack Obama is now the president and the revolution continues. So what we're going to go into right now is the first segment that we got going on today. And this one is from Robin Yento, who wasn't able to make it in today. But earlier today, he was able to make it to the rally demo of the SIEU Justice for Janitors campaign. And here is, without any further ado, here is that report from what happened earlier today.
This afternoon, janitors with the Service Employees International Union were in downtown Toronto calling on property managers to take up responsible contracting. Diego Mendez is with the Justice for Janitors campaign.
So right now what we have is a situation where industry stakeholders are coming together to write up a code for responsible contracting. And the idea is that all property managers need to make sure that whatever's going on in their building is that they're accountable for. So we don't have companies like Impact Cleaning Services not paying workers or paying workers less than minimum wage or people working without any kind of WSIB coverage, all kinds of problems. So this responsible contracting code, which is called the Responsible Property Services Code, would make sure that that happens. So workers are just coming together to make sure that this occurs. And it's a good idea for everybody. It's obviously a good idea for workers because their rights will be respected, the law won't be broken, they'll have basic rights respected. It's a good idea for tenants because then they know that there's dependable contractors cleaning their buildings and not have situations where there's cleaners who are forced to clean the toilets and their desks with the same gloves, which we've heard happens. And it's a good idea for property managers because they don't have to worry about the liability of having these kinds of practices occurring in buildings they're in charge of. And finally, legitimate companies who want to treat their workers right, who are obeying the law, they're put at a disadvantage when nobody does anything about these rogue companies. So this is what the code is about. This is what the movement is about. And it's simply good for everybody.
On hand to support the campaign were the NDP's Olivia Chow and Liberal MP for Davenport, Mario Silva.
Have to make sure that we fight for them, and that's why we're here. So thank you very much for all of you to be here on this cold day, but it's an important issue. We have to continue to fight for this and make sure that there's justice for our cleaners. Thank you.
I'd like to introduce the MP for Trinity Spadina, Olivia Chow.
Minimum wage, pension, sick leave. When you get injured on the job, you should get benefits. Those are fundamental human rights, and they are labor rights. Any company, through a loophole, through backdoor, through contracting out, when they violate these fundamental rights, then the government needs to come together and change the law. What you see today here rights are being respected. So what we will do is that we hope the property owners and the companies understand that they have to do the right thing and protect all workers. Like Mario, my mother was a hotel cleaner. She worked not on bound by SEIU, but on a different union. She cleaned hotel rooms. She did the laundry, and it is very hard work. And any kind of cleaning service, I tell you, the pay is low, and mostly immigrants, women and men, and they are most vulnerable to exploitation. Any companies that use this opportunity because they are immigrant women and men and exploit them is really not worthy of our support. So let's get together and pressure them to change and that they would be responsible. Yesterday we heard about responsibility. All around the world we heard that word, responsibility. I just hope to call on the corporate leaders that they too can be responsible citizens and do the right thing and adopt a code which, so that there's justice for janitors. Thank you.
Yes. Sherry DeNovo, who's been leading the fight for workers' rights here in the province of Ontario in the legislature. Sherry.
Thank you, everyone. We were fighting for the $10 minimum wage, and I know it's a minimum wage that most janitors don't see. And that's why you're here. We need property owners and managers to step up and to pay a fair wage.
Right.
Brothers and sisters, what do we want?
Justice
for janitors. When do we want it?
Now!
Absolutely. So I'm just going to say solidarity, get with it, let's win.
All right. Thank you.
Workers from different fields were also at the demonstration, including elementary school teachers.
My name is Sam Hammond. I'm the first vice president of the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario. I'm with the, as I said, with the Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario, obviously not janitors, but their issues are certainly the issues of our 73,000 members across the province in terms of justice, respect, and fair and respectful working conditions, which they're fighting for. And their campaign slogan is interesting, Justice for Janitors. It's really about justice for human beings and justice for people, and stopping the injustices that are going on in terms of the subcontracting work, the less than minimum wage in some cases that these workers are making. Some of these people who are cleaning our buildings, big corporate towers here in Toronto, in the evening when we're home resting, are making minimum wage and having to work two or three other jobs just to maintain a poverty line lifestyle, and that's completely unacceptable. And they're fighting for also employment standard issues that the rest of us take for granted, and we need to, as a teachers union and as a society, stand behind them and help them fight for them.
Janitors at the demonstration say that workers in the cleaning industry are getting together to make sure conditions for all janitors in Toronto get better.
My name is Julio. I work as a cleaner in Toronto, a different company, and I'm here to support the workers from Impact Cleaning Services. They are struggling to form the union. The company has classified most of them as a subcontractor, and they are trying to form the union. And we are here to show the company they are not alone. They have the support from other cleaning companies to support them. First of all, I believe the crisis now is because we are not getting a fair share in our workplace. There are a lot of pressure to lose the salary. That's why we are in the pressure. So, but we still fight for better wages. The cleaning industry, they are organizing in such a way that the building owners, they always pick the lowest price, the lowest bidding. So it's been happening for many years. It's a race to the bottom. We earn now close to minimum wage. Most of the company don't have benefits. And they also push to give you more work every day. So you can find in downtown a building that used to have 100 cleaners. You go there today, there are only 60 people working there. So it's a pressure every day. We don't get enough to pay. We have a lot of responsibilities. We clean big corporate offices. They are very rich, and they treat work like that. So we are here to show the building owners they have to support a contracting a policy that's they have to be good citizens from Toronto and offer a good job for the workers. It's not only go get a bid for a lowest company, but this company is breaking the law. It's not paying WSAB, CP, vacation. That's why we're here.
Okay, my name is Ignacio. I am working for Harlet, and we are supporting here all the workers who work for cleaning services. Because now the cleaning service industry is too much pressure against the worker. That we are, together we keep, we come strong, you know?
Mi nombre es Eugenia Lagar, yo trabajo para IFA. Ellos al contratarme dijeron que iban a pagar $9.
My name is Eugenia Lagar. I worked for Impact, and when they hired me, they told me they were going to pay me $9.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and that was just a segment produced by Robin Niento, who was at the rally earlier today, a demonstration downtown featuring people from the Justice for Janitors Impact Cleaning Workers Rally. And that was something that took place this afternoon, and interesting to hear many different people who partook in the rally, some words from them. And, of course, yesterday everyone, or a lot of people, heard the words of Barack Obama. So, of course, we just wanted to make sure that we reflect on what today is, the first day that Obama is the president.
These things are true.
That's right. These things are true. And what is true is some of the things that Mr. Obama was saying. And, of course, I guess the hope of the world is that Obama brings back some of the old, good old American values, such as
honesty and hard work, courage and fair play, tolerance and curiosity, loyalty and patriotism.
That's right. Some of the American values that Obama hopes to get in. It is a tough time in America and in the whole world with this what they call economic crisis. And during his inauguration speech, Obama did mention a few things about the crisis.
These are the indicators of crisis, subject to data and statistics.
That's right. There have been a lot of indications on what's going on in the market. And I guess when Obama really spelt it out, when he started talking about the free market.
Nor is the question before us whether the market is a force for good or ill. Its power to generate wealth and expand freedom is unmatched. But this crisis has reminded us that without a watchful eye, the market can spin out of control.
What we're going to do right now, since this is our welcome to Barack Obama, we're just going to play a track called I Can Be President. This one's by Novel featuring Joel Ortiz. Enjoy, and we'll be right back with some news on the Word of Mouth Wednesday.
Hello, Chicago!
We'll go as far as the eye can see. Got that girl, yeah, be all I could be. I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. Whoa, 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 whoa. I'm just kidding, but my feelings felt good.
smiles in the hood. No longer do we hope no more. Now we believe.
Go as far as I can see. Got that your love be all I can be. And I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. Oh, 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 oh. It was a landslide. We'll go as far as the eye can see. Got that lawyer be all I can be. And I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. And
so tomorrow, tomorrow, every tomorrow, too far to let it all go. Tomorrow, tomorrow, we'll break tomorrow. We've come too far to let it all go. Galaxy's eyes, man, they keep telling me the changes in the making. Only way we gon' change is if we change our way of thinking. So every man should have a good one inside. I'm talking to Mrs. Obama, young black Sarah Connor.
We'll go as far as the eye can see. Doubt that your love be all I could be. And I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. President, oh, 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 oh. We'll go as far as the eye can see. Got that your love be all I can be. And I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. I can be president. Oh, 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 oh.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. It's January 21st, 2009. And here is your news headlines for today. In national news, Liberal leader Mike Ignatieff said today, the country needs an election over the next week's budget like a hole in the head. The latest sign that he will keep the minority conservative government in power. If the opposition Liberals vote against the January 27th budget, the government will almost certainly be defeated, and that could trigger an election at the end of February or the start of March. In Quebec, Walmart Stores Incorporated violated rights of the workers at a Quebec store when it closed the store following union organizing efforts. Lawyers for the union told the Supreme Court of Canada today. The case has the potential for widespread repercussions as unions seek a foothold in Walmart stores in Canada and the United States. It involves a store Walmart opened in Jonquière, Quebec in 2001 and closed 4 years later after union was certified to negotiate a collective bargaining agreement and the province of Quebec's labor ministry said the negotiations should go to arbitration. The Jonquière store was the first in Canada or the United States to receive union certification, and Walmart quickly shut the store down. The department store giant argued in lower courts that it could not be forced to keep its stores open. But the workers' lawyers told the Supreme Court that this violated their freedom of association. And in international news in the Middle East, Israeli troops completed their withdrawal from Gaza, while the UN urged Israel's government to open all the border crossings to the Palestinian enclave to alleviate what he called a heartbreaking humanitarian situation. Shortly before dawn, the last tanks of Israel's army left the Gaza Strip and stationed on the Israeli side of the border, ready to respond to any contingency. The pullout happened simultaneously with Barack Obama's presidential inauguration, something that Israeli officials' sources had already announced. And this way, they also compiled their conditions of the truce fixed by Hamas. However, the truce did not include Israeli promises to lift the blockade imposed on Gaza 19 months ago or reopen the border crossings, the main demands by Hamas. And in U.S.-occupied Guantanamo Bay, war crimes court came to an abrupt halt today as military judges granted President Barack Obama's request to suspend proceedings while he reviews the predecessor's strategy for prosecuting terrorists. The judges quickly agreed to a 120-day suspension of the case against Canadian Omar Khadr. Khadr, now 22, is the last citizen of a Western nation held at Guantanamo. His lawyers have argued that he was a child soldier and that any prosecution should take place in the regular U.S. or Canadian courts. And in Cuba, the leader of the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro, received Argentine President Cristian Fernandez today, who wound up a three-day visit to the island. Shortly before leaving for Venezuela to meet with her peer Hugo Chavez, Fernandez said she discussed several issues with Fidel Castro. Fernandez added that they talked about relations between Cuba and Argentina and exchanged views about the first speech by Obama as president of the U.S. And in Guatemala, migration continues to be a priority for Central American countries and their relations with the new U.S. government, according to the Guatemalan foreign minister. Rodas told a new conference that Central American nations will lobby U.S. President Obama to regularize the situation of migrants and stop deportations. He noted that Guatemala would lobby the U.S. administration to find a permanent solution to this problem, which could not be solved during the George W. Bush government. Since the White House tightened its migration policy, the number of deported Guatemalans increased from 7,029 in 2005 to 27,929 in 2008. Another concern for Central America is the effect of the U.S. economic crisis on the region. And those are your headlines for today, the 21st of January. And it's a big day because this is day number one as Barack Obama's first official day as president. And, of course, it was the big speech yesterday. And I just got a quick clip. I think this was one of the best lines or segments of the whole speech. It's just a few lines long. He talks about corruption.
To those who claim to power through corruption and deceit and the silencing of dissent, know that you are on the wrong side of history. But that we will extend a hand if you are willing to unclench your fist.
That's right, the words of Barack Obama. And we're just about to throw a tune in music track. This one's by the artist 95.6. And it's a little something called Patriot Games, Take All I Got.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order. A world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. When we are successful, and we will be, we have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
Pit 26, they take all I got. Now the ill is hot. Pit 26, they take all I got. Pit 26, now the ill is hot. Pit 26, they take all I got. They take all I got. It's the new world order, but the new world's older. The new world rests on the new world's shoulder. But in this country state, the world gets older. The new world's dead now, the new world's over. Over to the dummies and the gaps on the hill. On the run from the petrol class, and it got me up. Congress is dead, I'm 100 miles, I'm running. Whether that we saw it, Barack Obama. And if
for me, if you work with me, if you make phone calls with me, if you organize with me, I promise you, we'll win Virginia, we'll win this election, and you and I together will change the country and change the world. Thank you, everybody. God bless.
These things are true.
Word of Mouth Wednesday. We're back here, and that was a track by 95.6. Our next guest, who's a local political intellectual and a recording artist on different records. He's here to speak with us for a few minutes about the state of the world today. And we just played one of his tracks there, Patriot Games, and it's an honor to welcome to the show today from different records, 95.6. Word up.
Thank you, Dennis. Good to be here.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for appearing on the show. You're making a lot of music, and of course, I just wanted to ask you about the man of the day. We've got our welcome to President Obama episode going on. History was made yesterday. Do you have any comments on this man in the highest office, Obama?
Well, of course. I mean, what Obama is doing right now is representing a change of the face of American policy. I mean, in the eyes of the world, and it's also a positive change that he has for America. I mean, what he's looking to do is do what's good for his country, right?
Definitely, and I guess that kind of leads into the other celebration we're having, which is the end of the reign of George W. Bush. Do you have any comments on, I guess, the guy that Obama would be replacing?
Well, I mean, when you say any comments about the guy Obama will be replacing, you hit the nail right on the head, because what we're seeing is a replacement of the face of an American government and an American policy. It's not the change of the American government. Mm-hmm. So with the end of the Bush years, there's a foundation where Obama has the freedom to reshape this American policy, or rather redirect it. So what we saw is 8 years of Republican policy right now, and how they actually carry out that policy. And what Obama doesn't have now is he doesn't have to suffer the repercussion of the past 8 years of how Bush carried out American foreign policy. I mean, when we look at Obama's directives, they are not changing what America's setting out to do. What he's doing is he's changing the way in which he does them.
Well, we just played the track there, Patriot Games, and I just wanted to, I'm not sure if everyone in the audience was able to decode the whole song there, because it is a bit of a fast rap, but I did wanted to mention a few of the quotes that I got from there. One was that it's a new world order, and I think that one was pretty clear, but then there was another one in there that said Barack Obama, a secret Republican, and then later on in the song, and I think that this sort of, it goes in with the title Patriot Games, where you say that Obama might be planning to engage in Patriot Games with the Blue Bloods. I guess this is some of your concerns with Obama.
Well, that last quote, you misconstrued. It's Patriot Games with a Blue Blood Shame.
Right.
Basically, well, not to dissect everything. We don't have the time to do that right mm-hmm. now. But what I'm really talking about there is exactly what I just told you a moment ago. I mean, when everybody's massing behind this new President Obama and everybody's expecting some kind of surreal change that's going to reshape how American imperialism around the world is developing, I mean, that's not really what we're... That's not going to happen. It's simply impossible to happen. When you look at the aims of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, not the way that they carry out these aims, you see underneath it all, it's the same goal. We're not seeing a Democrat that's going to carry out a different goal than the Republicans. So that explains that quote a little bit. And what's really interesting to see is who Obama is surrounding himself with. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it's really interesting how when you watch the elections, how Obama talks about Clinton, who is now in his cabinet,
right.
And of all the criticism he has of her, and now he has her in his cabinet to carry out the same view, to carry the same influence that he opposed for the White House. And so, I mean, that in itself is really interesting to see as well.
Definitely. And I guess you pointed out Hillary Clinton just there, and I know that that was the big headlines today, was that the, I guess, the United States representatives approved of her being Secretary of State. So I guess you're not expecting to see much of a change in the foreign policy.
Well, with the foreign policy itself, again, I mean, we will notice a change in quote on the way that it's carried out, but we're not going to see a change of its actual goals. I mean, even if you look at his chief of staff, Emmanuel, I have a quote from one of his books where he says, "We need to make our country safe. America must lead the world's fight against the spread of evil and totalitarianism. We need to fortify the military's thin green line around the world by adding to the U.S. Special Forces and the Marines. We need to expand the U.S. Army by 100,000 more troops." That's from Rahm Emanuel. I mean,
wow.
That's what Obama is surrounding himself with. And even in Obama's inauguration speech, I mean, you pointed out one of your favorite quotes from him, one of the most resounding.
Mm-hmm.
But while I was listening to the speech, what I found most resounding was when he said, "We will not apologize for our way of life, nor will we waver in its defense. And for those who seek to advance their aims by inducing terror and slaughtering innocents, we say to you now that our spirit is stronger and cannot be broken. You cannot outlast us, and we will defeat you." And when we look at what's happening around the world right now, specifically in Gaza, I mean, we're seeing the slaughtering of innocents. We're seeing the induction of terror by means of American ammunition, American supplies, and American aid to Israel. And Obama repeatedly reflects himself and states outright that he's a staunch ally and supporter of Israel. And that's a very big contradiction that is not reflected in the media, and that he does not reflect to his people with honesty. He should come out and say it, because when 1,200 Palestinians die in Gaza as a result of Israeli force supported by the past American president, as well as this American president, it's very contradicting. So that's where you see no change.
Right. So you brought up this this international this crisis that was in Gaza. It went on for weeks and weeks. But now they say that the big headlines are that Israel has pulled out. And then there's also big headlines that the guy that is in charge of the UN, Ban Ki-moon, is now condemning Israel for some of the attacks. And then I also noticed that on your MySpace, myspace.com/956, where you can find some of your music tracks, on your MySpace, you've got the place where you put your picture on MySpace, yours is sort of a visual art. And in it is the UN helmet, the blue helmet with the UN on it. Do you have any comments on the UN's role in this situation in Gaza?
The United Nations has a central role in reflecting upon world events,
mm-hmm.
because it's not an organization that can implement with force its resolutions, because that's up to its member states, other than the UN peacekeepers. But there, what we see is that the United Nations fails in carrying out its own resolution and its own policies. I mean, there have been tens and tens of resolutions, I don't know the count, passed condemning Israel's actions in the past and now. But those resolutions are carried out, and the majority of the resolutions are either vetoed by America or America abstains from them, and they go on to be ignored. Israel continuously ignores United Nations resolutions against it, but at the same time turns around and points to the resolutions that condemn Hamas or that condemn other terrorist organizations, or what they call terrorist organizations.
Right.
So when we look at the UN's role, we see the UN more as a commentator from the sidelines that can't really implement any of its own policies. The people that can implement the policy are the people on the ground, and the people on the ground are troops and forces with guns. The UN repeatedly fails in its implementation of any kind of change. I mean, when the UN Secretary General was in Israel, Israel was shelling UN schools with the claims that Hamas was firing rockets from them. And these are schools that the UN told Israel not to shell because they are occupied by innocent civilians that are sheltering themselves. And the world stands by and it watches. And this is when the Secretary General of the United Nations was in Israel. United Nations schools are being shelled. If the United Nations cannot protect its own interests, if the United Nations cannot protect its own structures, how is it going to seek to protect anybody else in the world, Dan?
Right, and we've got a quick clip here on the it is the Welcome Barack Obama show, and you mentioned a bit of this quote here. Here's just a quick quote here.
We will not apologize for our way of life.
And I thought that that was a very important statement that Obama made, because, you know, a lot of problems get blamed on the U.S. and some of the lifestyle. They say that there's a consumption crisis because of people in North America, in the Western world, are consuming too much. They say that there's an energy crisis because we're using too much energy. They say that there's the economic crisis, which might have been caused by certain certain actions within the U.S. and this Federal Reserve and all the economic, what they call the crisis that's going on. Do you have any words on the economy?
Well, I mean, we're all being affected by the economy. I'm seeing it spread, I mean, into daily life. And, of course, in the stock market, it's affecting jobs. It's affecting the way that we live our daily lives. And the economy itself, throughout the history of the stock market, specifically in the past 5 years, you see manipulation, and you see a manipulation of stocks, that is. I mean, and aside from that, if you just take it back a step, when you look at the American national debt and what's caused this American national debt and how it's risen in the past 8 years under George Bush's economic endeavors, let's call them, we see why this is happening. I mean, billions and billions and billions and billions are being spent in Iraq. And this money could have been diverted back into the American system, but instead it's focused to advanced American imperial interests in the Middle East. America gives a lot of aid. I mean, we talked about Israel a moment ago, but, I mean, we can't ignore Arab complicity or the complicity of Arab governments in ties with American politics. And the way that relates to the economy is that America pushes aid towards Egypt. It gives aid to Jordan and, of course, Israel. And this is money that amounts to the billions and billions of dollars that are used to further their interests instead of reinvesting that money back into the American government. I mean, these are all of this money amounts to a lot more than the stimulus packages that are being passed in America right now, the stimulus packages that are being done incurring debt in order to stimulate the economy. If you redirect all of that money and put it back into America rather than giving it to other countries, allies in the Middle East or whatnot, then we'd see a better economic situation.
Right, yeah, I guess that's the hope for a change there when it comes to the economy. And I just wanted to make sure that we end off this interview by playing a track. And I know I got the new version of the Fed. Do you have any words to talk about this new music track?
Well, there's a shift in focus through each verse. I mean, since we're gonna end this, what I really want to say is that when I'm commentating on things, I mean, I don't have all the solutions or I don't have all the answers. And even through the music, I don't pretend to try to answer everybody's questions. Mm-hmm. Because if everybody is looking to music production to answer their questions, then, I mean, we're living in a really sorry state, because I really want to encourage people to read, to look at alternative media, whether it's through music, whether it's through news organizations, whether it's through foreign news organizations, and to not only rely on what they read on a headline. And that's the best thing that we could do for ourselves if we want to help with this change that Obama's supposedly bringing to the world, because we have to remember he's not president of the world, and he's not looking to advance the world's interests. He's the president of America, and he is going to look to expand American interests.
For real, for real. And this is, we've been speaking with 95.6, and I believe the MySpace is myspace.com/90, the word 90, N-I-N-T-E-Y-5-6.
N-I-N-E-T-Y-5-6, yeah, 95.6.
All right, N-I-N-E-T-Y-95-6, different records. All right, well, yeah, I guess we'll talk to you later, 95.6.
Well, it's a pleasure being on the show, Dan. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Peace.
Take care.
This is 95.6 with News at 6, and today's headlines.
It's universal, it's message in a commercial. Institution amenable to solutions. What's the solution of this impossible news for? Let me take about you hops 2-4 by 2-4. Rip in the interest of the mortgage. Back up all the furniture and back into the storage. This generation's picked up a ruthless leash. Let us take away from waiting in the apple of temptation. And I'm a racist humble to nobody leaves proof. No matter what color skin, same color teeth. Draw, it's GFU in the 91 war. Am I right round from Isabel's life and open? Due date on the minimum, baby, make me flex. What you do to the first of the month? Well, Ben Bernanke, lobster for lunch.
Now, this gal slept 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young Dane Collins. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge. Count this down, slut 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young name college. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge. Politic and politicians, tricky rich gimmicks. Serve all you new speak, double speak lyrics. Oil falls, but gas breaks rice. Coalition hot tricks while they raise our taxes. Give us project has a money living in a mansion. Is he hold debts, be hexed while our subsidies cancelled. Raise them in a moment, but it's taxable. And hard pressure's problem when he's held accountable. Count this down, slut 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young name college. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge. Count this count, slut 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young name college. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge.
Analysts analyze mid stock prices plummet. GE scheming at mafia summits. Protest till the tear gas hits. Fascist police undercover start riots. Solidarity fist strike back and burn flag. CNN censors so you ignore truth. You conscious. No, this is proof you're sleepy. I see your eyes trash fixing daisy. Your whole life is fugazi. Keep my two eyes open for the third eye watching while yours are eyes wide shut to the clockwork.
Count this down, slut 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young Dane Collins. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge. Count this down, slut 9-5-6 when the mob hits on the ground under that young Dane Collins. Lie on the new screen while I spread knowledge.
Count this down, slut. That's what's up. Different records. Don't drop this.
Word of mouth. Wednesday, we're back here on the show, and our last segment of the show is by Robin Yento, who wasn't able to make it in, but he spoke earlier today with the Welland MP, Malcolm Allen, and these are some words about the whole economy in Canada and what we can expect maybe next week when the federal government, the Conservatives, release their budget.
On this situation with these conditions set by the federal minister of industry on the big three automakers to lower their labor costs.
Well, I think when the minister says those sorts of things, he's asking us to compare apples to oranges. For instance, when he talks about offshore producers like Toyota and Honda, and I think we should only talk about the ones in this country, not ones in the southern U.S. where conditions are totally different. The wage rates are very similar. The benefit packages are very similar. Where things are dissimilar is in the number of retired workers that the Big Three has in comparison to the new offshore transplants, which have only been here, I think Toyota's been here the longest and dates back somewhere around 15 to 17 years. So they have very few retirees, if any. So a huge piece of the cost differential goes to retired workers when it comes to pensions and their benefits. And I guess if the minister is suggesting that somehow we should just simply stop paying those pensions and those benefits to those retired workers to bring costs in line, perhaps the minister needs to talk to those retired workers first. Because the Conservative government tried that once before with retired workers and seniors, and certainly changed their mind in a hurry. So I think it's the typical red herring that the Conservatives raise when it comes to attack on workers who make decent wages and benefits, that somehow they're overpaid and they should take less out of the system. I think that's wrongheaded. In fact, most of the economists that I've listened to and spoke with over the last little while have said, now is not the time to take purchasing power out of the hands of ordinary working people. Now is the time to put purchasing power in their hands. And to reduce workers' wages in the big three would be the exact opposite thing that the economists are saying we should do.
And just hoping you can comment also on the situation with Navistar, where the federal government awarded a $250-something million contract to this company to manufacture cars for the Canadian Army, and that company instead is going to be producing vehicles for the Canadian Army in Texas.
Well, what I find reprehensible about that is the fact that Navistar has a plant in the London area, and I believe it's in Chatham, if I remember right. And the fact that it makes large trucks and would have the capability, I'm sure, with a small investment to actually produce those trucks for the Canadian military. So here we, again, have a lack of Canadian procurement policy when it comes to spending Canadian taxpayers' dollars, in this particular case, for those employees that work for our armed forces who actually work for the Canadian government. We're actually exporting jobs and capital into the United States instead of keeping it here in Canada. At a time where Navistar has laid off literally hundreds of workers in that plant due to a reduction in the commercial market for large trucks. So when they had an opportunity to make an investment in Canadian jobs and in Canadians, they've again fallen asleep at the switch and haven't done that. But let me just sort of jump back for a second back to the wage piece and so that folks get a kind of a historical context of what the big three workers have done in the last couple of contracts. Specifically, this most latest round, their wages are frozen for the duration of the collective bargaining process. And their cost of living allowance, which basically gets calculated on a quarterly basis, regardless of what the cost of living does, they will receive nothing for that. So for all intents and purposes, big three workers have frozen their wages, including cost of living, for 18 months, and their actual base wage can't change for 3 years, as well as they've made some changes to their benefits. So they've offset, or what they call in their vernacular, they've given offsets to the big three corporations in this last round of bargaining. So they've already anticipated what was coming. They saw in advance that there was going to be difficulties in the industry, and when they sat down and bargained the collective agreement in a responsible manner, they understood the dilemmas that the corporations faced, and they addressed it, and the corporations were pleased with them.
Malcolm, I want to head now into talking about the upcoming session of Parliament. The Conservatives went away with more of a conciliatory approach. They said that they would start to address the economic crisis more seriously, but these... What their conditions now that they're setting on workers, the Navistar situation, just before the federal budget is about to go down in Parliament, do you think that they're heading back to a position of belligerence? And if so, why do you think they're taking that position?
Well, I think part of the problem with the Conservatives, is their ideologues at heart, and they're not pragmatic. And I think we saw that in the economic financial update in the fall when Minister Flaherty delivered it to the House, which precipitated them proroguing the Parliament rather than facing a confidence vote. And they realized that they were about to be defeated, and they basically had an epiphany. And as time has gone past, they've decided that they didn't really have an epiphany, that they really need to go back to where they are, where they were before. And that's why we hear things like workers should take less, we should give tax cuts. All of the things that the major mainstream economists, who one wouldn't consider to be left-leaning economists, if you will, or pro-labor, you know, there's a great number of them, including the Conference Board of Canada, have said what we need to do is stimulate the economy and don't take money out of workers' pockets at this point in time. Don't have them do that, because we need them to have that disposable income and that purchasing power to generate the growth in the economy that's lacking at this point. So I think what they're doing is they've gotten emboldened again during this prorogation to the point where they're coming back thinking we'll tinker at the edges and we'll talk a good game, but when push comes to shove, we're going back to our old ways and we'll do what we've always done. And that would be an absolute catastrophe for this country. I mean, we are in an economic crisis, and we need to take bold and decisive action that helps put people back to work and helps communities to get back on a strong footing, because there's too many communities around this province and throughout this country that are suffering at this point in time with large unemployment. Here in my own community, the anti-poverty group that the Hope Center that looks after those in most desperate need is going to City Council and asking for double the money that it had just 3 years ago for food security, to put food on a shelf for those who don't have any, because it's broke. It's run out of cash, and it's basically run out of donations, and it's in a desperate state. And that is the place of last resort for those who are poor in this community. So that's the kind of dilemma we're facing in communities across this country. And conservatives aren't addressing that issue. In fact, they're ignoring it. And I believe they ignore it at their own peril.
The new Liberal leader, Michael Ignatieff, has said that Canada needs an election like it needs a hole in the head. It's a sign that, you know, he may not support a coalition, and he may keep Harper in power. What do you think the situation in Parliament's going to look like next week? And if you can comment also on the push by the part of unions for strengthening the EI system.
Well, I think clearly, next Tuesday there'll be a budget speech from Minister Flaherty, and people will get to judge that government on what he pronounces. But what people have to keep in mind is Tuesday is simply a speech. And the difficulty we have as New Democrats is when we look back at their history, they make great speeches and they don't follow through. An example of that is their 06 budget promised $33 billion to big cities for infrastructure renewal. Not one penny has flowed to big cities yet. So it's really the budget implementation. But we know that conservatives over the last number of years don't fulfill the promises. They make them, then they break them. As far as EI reform, it's absolutely imperative that we have EI reform. I mean, that should have happened years ago. It didn't, but now is the opportune time to actually have that reform come into place, where we eliminate the two-week waiting period. We need to make sure that people have that money in their hands, because that money is going to go directly back into the economy to make sure that people can keep their house, put groceries on the table, and sustain their families over this particular period in time. We also need to look at making sure benefits cover a greater period in time, and that more people qualify. What's happening, especially in Ontario, is one in three people qualify for unemployment insurance, which isn't the case across the country. It's higher in different jurisdictions. We need to have that as an essential piece of the social safety net, because once you fall through the EI safety net, and you're now looking at Ontario Works in this province, and to get Ontario Works means you basically need to have nothing. You can't have assets. So if I was talking to one of my colleagues the other day who was talking about a guy who lost his job and had an old pickup truck. And he applied for Terry Works, and they told him, you have to sell the pickup truck because it's an asset. If he sells the pickup truck,
that's what he was using to actually get to work when he was working. And since there's no public transit, he's in a smaller community, and if he sells the truck, he won't be able to get to work if there's a job available to him that's perhaps, you know, 5, 10, 15 miles away. So we need to strengthen EI. We need to reform it so that more people get in, and we need to make sure that people don't have to wait those 2 weeks before they get paid.
I want to thank you for your time tonight.
I thank you, too.
All right, that was just our show for today, and my name is Daniel Libby. Just wanted to thank Robin Yento and all our guests for today, and I just wanted to make sure, well, we still got a second left, just to mention a few events. There's War Resisters Action all going on this week. Check out resistors.ca for that. Plus, there's some big events featuring Jeff Halper, the Nobel Prize nominee and Israeli peace activist, speaking about the siege in Gaza. There's events tomorrow at Ryerson at 1 p.m. in this building, 55 Gould Street, the Student Center. And there's also some other events going on involving Jeff Halper, so you can search for more information on that online. And then also this Sunday, there's a Socialist Project Labor Forum, Working Class Fight Back, Lessons from the Last Great Depression, featuring Brian Palmer, 1 p.m. this Sunday at United Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street, socialistproject.ca. For more information on these events, socialistproject.ca/events. And my name's Daniel Libby, and that's it for today. We'll just throw it to our next show, which is the Big City Opry, featuring Josie Minor.